Welcome back. I'm Michael Carey, the moderator of this year's running programs. Thank you for joining us as we hear from the legislative candidates running for seats throughout South Central Alaska. Joining me tonight are Daisha Eaton of KSK Radio and Grace Jang of KTVA Television. Now let's meet the candidates for Senate seat G. They are Republican Bob Roses and Democrat Bill Willikowski. We'll have opening statements, please, starting with Mr. Roses.
Thank you, Michael. It's really a pleasure to be here again, and look forward to the entire campaign and to the entire process. You know, I've lived in the district 47 years. I lived in East Anchorage when we didn't have any paved streets, we didn't have any sewer, we didn't have gas. It was a little bit different lifestyle then. And I'm running because I want to make sure that we can continue to move Alaska forward with good economic development, good sound jobs, a good education system, and to make sure that all of the opportunities that were available when I came here will still be available for my kids and my grandkids. And so it's important that we keep the state moving in the right direction. And I look forward to being able to do that as I serve East Anchorage and Elmendorf for Senate seat G, and would appreciate everybody's vote.
Thank you. Mr. Willikowski, 1 minute opening statement.
Thank you. It's been an honor to serve you. The past 6 years, I've been the co-chair of the Joint Armed Services Committee, the co-chair of the State Affairs Committee, co-chair of the Senate Resources Committee. Before that, I was president of Northeast Community Council. I was selected by the chamber as a top 40 under 40 recipient. We've gotten a lot done in the last 6 years. I've passed legislation to increase the minimum wage, help unemployed veterans, help homeless veterans, crack down on gang members, sex offenders, human traffickers, drunk drivers, help seniors get medical care, fought gasoline price gouging, and pushed to start getting our fair share for our oil and gas. This has allowed us to grow our state savings account to over $16 billion, the largest in the nation. It's allowed us to make neighborhood improvements that are necessary. A new Muldoon Fire Station, a new Muldoon Park Strip, improvements to Russian Jack Park, local road improvements, school improvements. When the state picks up the tab for these things, it saves taxpayers money. In fact, according to a nonpartisan legislative research report, we've saved taxpayers over $5,000. That's money in your pocket. I look forward to discussing my vision going forward for Alaska. Thank you.
Now we'll move to our reporters and remind the candidates you have 45 seconds to respond to the reporters' questions, and your opponent will have 30 seconds to comment on your response. Let's go first to Daisha Eaton. First question.
This is for Mr. Roses. So why does Senator Willikowski need to be replaced, in your opinion?
Because I think we have a totally different philosophy on where we need to go. I mean, according to Bill and some of the comments that he's made, he wants to wait and see what happens with the oil before he decides whether we're going to reduce the taxes. And I don't think we're in a position where we can wait. Our budget is based on approximately $100 per barrel oil. We have a declining at about 40,000 barrels per day. And if the price drops, we're going to be upside down in our budgets, and we need to stem that off before we get there. So we just have a different philosophy on which direction we think the state should go.
Mr. Willikowski, 30 seconds.
Thank you. Well, just to correct the statement, I never said let's wait and see what happens before we do something with the oil. Increasing production is very important. I've got a six-point plan. In fact, I've proposed legislation to do this. I've voted on legislation to increase oil production. I've got a couple things in mind. You can set a decline curve for existing fields, and if they beat the decline curve, they get tax breaks. If they produce new oil in new fields, they get tax breaks. These are things that I've supported. These are things that I've voted on. Enforcement of the leases. We've got oil companies sitting on leases on the North Slope. Let's enforce the leases so that they get to production quicker.
Okay. Grace Jang, first question.
And this question is from Mr. Willikowski. It's been a defining issue throughout the election season. Why does Alaska need a Senate bipartisan coalition?
Well, if you look what's happening in Washington, D.C., we've got hyper-partisan gridlock. They can't get anything done. People can't work together. In Alaska, 6 years ago when I first got elected, we formed a bipartisan working group. I think it's worked extremely well. In that time, we've been able to put aside very partisan, very divisive issues and focus on what's best for Alaska. We've done some great things. We've we passed oil tax legislation, which finally started getting our fair share for our oil resources. Because of that, that's allowed us to grow our state savings account to over $16 billion, the largest in the nation. It's allowed us to fund capital projects that are necessary all through the state. It's allowed us to pay down our retirement debt. I think we've done a lot of good things with the bipartisan working group. I hope we're able to continue going forward.
Mr. Roses.
Yes, I don't think anybody's opposed to working across party lines, but one of the problems that you have when you form a coalition the way this one was, all of the key and major committees were controlled by one party. So how do you call it bipartisan when that's the case? And that really isn't what happened. I mean, we had a Senate president that was of one party, but he's sort of the ringmaster of what goes on. But most of the committees is where the work gets done, and those were not totally bipartisan.
Daisha Eaton.
This is for Mr. Wilikowski. There's been a lot of talk about a gas line for a while now. Is there really a gas line in our future, or is that just a pipe dream?
Well, a gas line will be built when it's economic, when the economics work out. When we were looking at this 5-6 years ago, gas was trading in the lower 48 around, $7 to $10 per 1,000 cubic feet. It's now down to between $2 and $3. At the same time, you've got gas now trading in Japan for $13 to $15 and throughout Asia for very high amounts. So when I worked on this issue, one of the things that I pushed for was a provision that required that we scope out a plan down to Valdez. And fortunately, we did that because now the big three have come into alignment and they're looking at building a gas line down to Tidewater, either Valdez or Nikiskie. The governor just got back from Japan. We have all three oil companies in alignment. I'm optimistic. There was an informal open season. I've heard it's been successful. I think I'm optimistic on it.
Mr. Roses.
Well, I find that interesting because when we first started talking about the Trans-Canada contract and several of us brought up the issue of doing an in-state line and bringing it to Tidewater, there was a great deal of opposition to that among those in the Senate bipartisan group. So I find it interesting now that they're encouraged by the fact that we may take it to Tidewater. I voted against TransCanada because at the time I thought it was a poor deal. I certainly didn't like the treble damage clause that was in there. And I think that's part of what is holding us up is because we're now so closely tied to TransCanada and the decisions that they make. We have to now consider them and bring them into every aspect of what we do. I think that's wrong.
Grace Jang, your next question.
Mr. Roses, in the last legislative session, it failed, but how would you have voted on the governor's proposal to give up to $2 billion in tax breaks to oil companies?
Well, that's sort of a difficult question to answer because if you're not there for the debate, you're also not there to be able to offer any amendments to the process that goes on. But I would say it's probably fair to say that I probably would have gone along with some of the concepts that were in the bill. But I have my own plan. I have my own ideas to how we get there. And so I'd rather talk about it rather than the governor's bill because I wasn't there. I couldn't shape it. Yeah, I think what we need to do is take the decline curve and we need to offset the piece of the progressivity by the amount of production that they produce. We don't need to wait a year to see whether or not they're going to do increases. You put it into effect immediately. If they show an increase in production, you offset that against the progressivity, and then you put a floor on it so it doesn't go below a certain amount. That also protects you in the event that the prices drop.
Thanks. Let's go to Mr. Wilikowski.
Thank you. This is a fundamental difference that we have, and it's a fundamental difference that's critical in this election. Bob and I served together when ACES came about. I voted for it. He voted against it. Had he gotten his way, we would still be operating under the old PPT. We'd be billions of dollars poorer today. To say that he wouldn't vote for HB 110. Well, he's already voted for a bill that's worse than HB 110 because he voted against ACES. So, and I know he's gone around criticizing me for my position on oil taxes, and it seems now that he's adopted my exact position on oil taxes. I find that ironic.
Daisha Eaton, your final question for this round.
This is for Mr. Wilikowski, and it's about health care. A lot of people would like to see it improved, especially the access to health care in our state. How would you do that if you're elected?
Well, I actually co-sponsored a bill years ago for which is actually very similar to what Mitt Romney had proposed in Massachusetts. And it was a state solution. It was a bill that wouldn't have the federal government put a mandate on us. It would do similar things to what is being done in Massachusetts. It would allow for people with pre-existing conditions to get insurance. It would allow for kids to get insurance with their parents. It would cut the average health care insurance bill by thousands of dollars. Now, there was a mandate in that bill, and that was probably a mistake, actually. That was probably something that I think through the committee process we could have worked out, but I think that was a good way forward. Moving forward, where do we go from now? Healthcare exchanges. I was disappointed when the governor didn't accept $1 million for the healthcare exchange.
Let's go to Mr. Roses.
Well, I find it interesting that he is now talking against some of the very same things in the bill that he proposed. And the bill was actually called a health insurance mandate bill. But now he talks about how it's probably a mistake. And so I'm here to tell you that I think several of the things that he's proposed are mistakes. And some of the things he voted on in the past were mistakes. And hopefully in my closing arguments, I'll be able to talk about the ACES bill that he said that I voted against and clarify and actually tell you the truth about it.
Grace Jang, final question.
This question is for Mr. Roses. Mountain View residents recently held a two-day town hall meeting talking about the needs they say are unmet and unaddressed in their community. It's in your district. What do you think are the unmet needs of Mountain View, if at all?
Well, North Mountain View is not in. Part of South Mountain View is in the district. But that doesn't change the fact that the needs are the same regardless of whether they're in Mountain View, and you're going to find some of the same needs in Muldoon. You're going to find some of those very same needs in portions of Spinard, and even, believe it or not, in some of South Anchorage. I taught at Diamond High School, and I can tell you some of the needs of folks in that community are no different. And so we have to address a lot of the concerns. When we have the issue over whether we have, you know, the inebriates and how are we going to deal with that. And you're not going to come up with a single answer as to what it's going to be in 45 seconds, but a lot of the proposals that came forward need to be addressed, and there's ways to do that. And I think if we connect with some of the private companies and some of the social programs that we have rather than the state doing it, I think we're better off.
Mr. Wilikowski.
Well, I think the best social program is a good job, and so I focused on economic development and jobs during my time in the legislature. Through the capital budget, we've created, according to the nonpartisan legislative research department, over 125,000 private sector jobs in Alaska. One of the things that I pushed for was a new training center in Northeast Anchorage to help people get trained in construction work. Of course, roads are a big issue. I've pushed for new roads. I've probably gotten more funding for our district than we've had in years, decades possibly. Parks, that's another big issue.
Okay, now we'll turn to the candidates and have a chance to question one another. Questions should be of 15 seconds length. Your opponent will have 45 seconds to respond, and then you'll have 15 seconds to comment on the response. We'll start with Mr. Roses.
Thank you very much. Bill, I noticed in your comments that you stated that you were supportive of the fire station. I find that really ironic, because when Mayor Begich had in his plan that Muldoon Fire Station was not to be funded, it was me and Peggy Robinson and Ainsley Phillips, part of the Northeast Community Council, that insisted that be part of the plan, and it was part of what I pushed forward in the capital budget.
Okay, and that's a statement more than a question. The question in there somewhere?
So do you recall that you were opposed to the fire station before you were for it?
No, I was never opposed to the fire station. In fact, I'm the one who put the money in the budget for the fire station. I put $6 million in the budget for Fire Station 6. I put $6 million in the budget for Fire Station 3. I'm the one who pushed it. I mean, that's a matter of record. You can go back and look at the capital budget. You can go back and look who put it in the budget.
Mr. Rose, you want to comment briefly? 15 seconds.
I believe if you recall back when this conversation came up as part of the capital projects, that Mayor Begich was opposed to it, and you agreed with him at that time. It was the rest of us that moved that forward. So, and we were glad that he, you know, finally came around.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wilikowski, your turn to ask a question.
All right, thank you. Bob, for years, East Anchorage has been in the short end of the stick, and in the past 4 years, I've gotten money for the new Muldoon Fire Station, Russian Jack Park, Centennial Park, and new Muldoon Park Strip, funding for numerous roads around the community, including Muldoon Road. Do you think these projects will benefit East Anchorage?
Of course. Any of the projects you get like that are going to benefit East Anchorage. I mean, if we want to go back and talk about things that I done, I was the one that helped get the money for the Muldoon School Library. I mean, we can go back. You know, I've been in that community 47 years, and I've done many, many things to help bring funds in and lobby the legislature. They're all good projects that help in the community, always have been.
Mr. Wilikowski, 15 seconds.
I think in the last 4 years, we've gotten more in the budget than we have in decades. We've gotten money for a new Muldoon Fire Station. We've gotten money for Muldoon Road. We've gotten money for Dubin Road. We've gotten money for DeBar Road. I think it's been a huge success for the people of East Anchorage.
Okay, Mr. Wilikowski, you have a second question for Mr. Roses.
I do. Bob, I've laid out some ideas for how to put more oil in the pipeline. Number one, produce more oil than project in existing fields, you get a tax break. Produce new oil in new fields, you get a tax break. Monitor and enforce leases. Do you disagree with any of these ideas?
No, I don't disagree with them. But the one thing I did see on your website where you had your six-point plan, which I just saw last week, is that you talked about a one-year delay to determine whether or not these things were being met before the plan was going to be implemented. Mine doesn't wait for a guarantee. Mine doesn't wait for a delay. It's instantaneous. And so I don't object to the way you have it. I just object to the way you get there.
Mr. Wilikowski, 15 seconds.
And I'm not sure where you're getting this one-year delay from. That's not what I say on my website. In fact, I voted on a plan that would go into effect immediately. I've supported plans that would provide tax rebates for people who produce oil immediately.
Mr. Roses, your second question.
Do you find that a little bit difficult? Let me ask it this way. What is your position when it comes to franking privileges and using state money to put out information that could be possibly conceived as being campaign related?
Well, my position is we have an office account. Some people take it as income. I don't take it as income. I communicate very strongly and very effectively with my constituents. I send out e-news, I send out emails, I go door-to-door communicating with my constituents, and I communicate with them quite a bit. I've never taken any of my office account money for personal expenses. I've never used it for campaign expenses. I know you filed a complaint saying that I did, and it was dismissed by AIPAC.
Mr. Roses.
As a frivolous complaint.
When was it dismissed?
Last night.
Oh, that's news to me. One of the things that brought that forward is when you go door to door in a campaign, you generally, the literature you hand out, you've paid for. The complaint was filed because Senator Wilikowski was handing out information that had been printed by the state with a state logo on it at the same time that the rest of us were paying for our campaign funds. So it may be not illegal, but it certainly doesn't pass the smell test, and I will take steps to correct it when I get elected.
Okay, Mr. Wilikowski, your final question for Mr. Roses.
Bob, I've passed legislation to help unemployed veterans find jobs, to help homeless veterans, to help Territorial Guard members, to honor Alaska troops who've sacrificed their lives. In your campaign flyer, you say you have a proven record as a voice of military and veterans. How many bills did you champion when you were in the legislature to help our military and veterans?
That's a good question, Bill. Thanks. One of the things that you're going to realize when you work down there in the legislature and those that get elected will find out, you don't always measure your success by how many bills you introduce. Part of the problem we have down there is about 500 bills that get introduced all the time. It costs money to introduce those. So I did my action through lots of other things. But I can tell you that it's easy to go out and say you champion veterans, but as I recall, when you were on the Northeast Community Council, you voted against every single veterans issue that came up. The fence along Muldoon, the fence along the housing behind Bartlett. So it's easy to say you support it, but it's another thing to see it in your actions.
Mr. Wilikowski.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I've never voted against the military issue. The fences had nothing to do with the military. But looking through your record, what I was able to find was that you sponsored two bills. One was a bill creating a specialty license plates, which you did get passed. The other never got a hearing in your committee. Since I've been in office, I've sponsored over a dozen bills helping homeless veterans, helping unemployed veterans, helping those who are serving us, honoring those who are serving us. I think my record on veterans is very strong.
Mr. Rose is here for his final question for his opponent.
Is it true that in the last days of session that there were two veterans bills that had been passed over from the House that were in your committee that you held up because you were upset because they would not pass your resolutions over in the House?
Well, I personally never held up any veterans bills. There were bills that were in the House. There were bills in the Senate. I had a bill that would help, that would allow for those who are serving our nation in the military get their permanent, ensure that they got their permanent fund. That was a bill that I passed, went to the House, never got a hearing. It was in the Senate, a similar version, and there was a deal that was cut between the House and Senate leadership, and unfortunately, the House gaveled out before the session ended, and the bills died. It was a very unfortunate
situation. Mr. Roses, 15 seconds.
Well, if you go on and listen to the audio tape at the end of session, you will see that there are two members of the House that specifically bring up the fact that the two bills were passed out of his committee so late that they couldn't be heard, and they were bills that would have been supported by the Senate had they got there. But because he was having a difficult time because his resolutions weren't being passed the way he wanted them to. So those aren't my words. Those are the words of two specific representatives in their closing press conference.
Let's go back to our reporters. Daisha Eaton, your first question for Mr. Wilikowski.
You've made planning and how Anchorage grows a focus during your service in the legislature so far. If you're reelected, what can people expect you to do from Juneau to address growth, particularly over on the east side?
Well, when I was, I served in Northeast Community Council for years before I got elected. I was on the Planning and Zoning Commission. So this has been an issue that I've followed very closely. I would like to see our community grow a little bit nicer than it has been. That's why I've focused on roads and parks and schools. And that's one of the reasons why I have tried to get a lot of funds for those things. You know, make sure that East Anchorage gets our fair share. It's why I've gotten funding for Muldoon Road. It's why I got funding. We're going to fix up DeBar Road next year. It's why I've gotten funding to improve our schools. It's why I've gotten funding to fix up a lot of our local roads. We've got some of the worst roads in all of Anchorage. And so there's a big focus on fixing them up, getting sidewalks where we need them.
Okay, Mr. Rose's 30 seconds.
You've noticed that my opponent has continually talked about how much money he's brought into East Anchorage and all the projects that he's funded. It's going to be interesting to determine what happens is if we don't have increased oil production and if the dollar for a barrel of oil starts to drop, he's not going to be able to tout all those projects. We need to put a plan together to move forward regardless of what the, you know, the price of oil is, and I don't think we have that now.
Grace Jang for Bob Roses.
Mr. Roses, you said that you lived through the 80s housing bust. Do you see us heading there again? And if so, is there anything that can be done on the state level? What would you do to prevent something like that from happening?
The best thing we can do to prevent that from happening is to make sure that we get our oil production back up and make sure that we get the gas pipeline going so that we have good jobs. And if people have good jobs, there's not a housing issue. And yes, I did live through the 80s, not only through the housing bubble, but I owned three businesses at that time. And I remember banks closing up, and I remember people throwing their keys on the table and giving up. And we can't head down that path again. I've lived in that community for 47 years, so I not only went through the 80s, I went through the 70s and the 60s and remember it very well.
Mr. Wilikowski, 30 seconds.
Thank you. I think, quite frankly, the biggest danger to our economy, to our permanent fund, to our to jobs, is my opponent's plan to roll back oil taxes by billions of dollars. Had he gotten his way when he voted for ACES, we'd be billions of dollars poor. We'd be draining out $2 billion per year every year. And we'd be in deficit spending right now had he succeeded. And fortunately, right now, we are on a path forward. We're saving billions of dollars every year. We saved $3 billion last year, $2 billion, paid off $1 billion in debt. We need to keep moving forward the way we're going.
Okay, thank you. Daisha Eaton.
This is for Mr. Roses. The Anchorage housing market is very tight. I believe it's about a 2.6% vacancy rate on rentals. If you're elected, what can be done from Juneau to increase affordable housing here?
Well, not only have I lived in the community, but I also built houses, and I also own apartments. So I've been a landlord for 40 years. So. I'm very much in touch with what's going on with the housing market and with the rental market. I think one of the things that we've done through the years is created more opportunities through AHFC for people to get financing. And I think anything that the state can do to help encourage and put money behind good home loans, that's the best thing that we can do.
Okay. Mr. Wilikowski, 30 seconds.
Thank you. I've supported funding for HFC to provide affordable housing. I think the private sector is, nonprofits are doing a great job. Cookingland Housing is doing a phenomenal job in our area. There are nonprofits that are doing a good job helping to house people who can't afford housing in our area. I think weatherization is another big issue and lowering energy costs. I've supported the home energy rebate programs. The weatherization programs help keep energy costs down, help put more money in people's pockets.
Okay, Grace Jang, your final question.
Mr. Wilikowski, your day job is as attorney for IBEW, a union. So how have you and how will you keep yourself separate from those interests?
Well, I mean, it's totally separate interests. And I'm proud that I go to work every day and I fight for good jobs and pensions and good benefits for people. And when I'm down in Juneau, if there are bills that come up that directly impact my employer, And quite frankly, there are very few that do that. Then I disclose them and I ask to be excused.
Mr. Rose's 30 seconds.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up because, quite frankly, in my opinion, because it's not just the fact that he works for IBEW, but they're very closely linked to the Central Labor Council, which is a combination of over 20 unions. And they're very actively involved in the decisions that they make. And so in my opinion, I don't see his position in Juneau being any different than that of a lobbyist, except that he actually gets to go on the floor and vote.
Okay, thank you very much. Now we'll go to our closing statements and we'll start with Bob Roses. 1 minute, sir.
Thank you very much. We've had a good opportunity here, and my opponents continue to bring up the fact that when I voted against ACES, it would create a disaster. I stood on the floor and debated against ACES, not because I didn't agree with the fact that we needed to increase the oil taxes on the oil companies, because I voted against the progressivity, because I said when oil prices get high, this will fail. It will disincentivize production. And if oil prices drop too low, it puts the state in a tenuous position. People laughed when I said, if it gets to $100 a barrel or higher, we're going to have a disaster. And that's exactly where we are. So not only is my statements on the floor when I voted against it become accurate, it's proven to be truthful in the fact that we did get there when nobody thought we would. It needs to be modified in order for us to incentivize. I put forward a plan that will do exactly that. And when I get elected, I will work very hard to make sure that we increase jobs and we increase the economy for the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wilikowski, 1 minute, your closing statement.
Thank you. I'd like to talk about my vision for Alaska. Let's get more oil in the pipeline, but let's not do it by throwing our oil money away. Good things are happening on the North Slope. We're at all-time highs in jobs, all-time highs in investment, all-time highs in the number of companies doing business on the North Slope. We need more production, but I believe we're on the cusp of seeing a huge amount of new oil from shale oil and other sources. The choice in this election is clear. Do we give away billions of dollars in our oil money with no strings attached, or do we continue to get our fair share? I'd like to see us turn our non-renewable fossil fuel resource into a truly renewable resource that will last for generations. Our permanent fund is worth $42 billion. Norway's, with less oil and less time, is worth $600 billion. Let's grow our state savings so we can pay for government for generations to come. Let's invest in renewable and low-cost energy for all Alaskans. Let's have a world-class education system. I thank you, and I ask for your vote so I can continue to go down to Juneau and stand up for you and for these ideas.
Thank you, Mr. Roses. Thank you, Mr. Wilikowski. Next on Running, House District 13. Please stay with us.
Hi, I'm Daisha Eaton, KSKA's South Central reporter. On election night, I'll be reporting from the Denina Center, covering the South Central races. With 59 of 60 seats up for grabs because of redistricting, this is a high-stakes election year. Will the 10-10 split in the Senate be upset? Will the bipartisan coalition survive the election or be cast aside? Whoever wins the South Central races will help determine how Alaska moves forward. Tune into KSKA Anchorage on Tuesday night, November 6th, for APRN's special election night coverage.
My name is Josh Edge, web producer at AlaskaPublic.org. On election night, be sure to visit AlaskaPublic.org for comprehensive web coverage from reporters stationed throughout Alaska. You can also find podcasts for all of our election-related programs, from Debate for the State to Running to Talk of Alaska, and find links to voter resources and election results. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at APRN and like us on Facebook at AlaskaPublic.org.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. You can find Monday through Friday night's schedule for Running on KSKA and Alaska Public Television at AlaskaPublic.org.
Now let's meet the candidates in House District 13. They are with us, Republican Barbara Bachmeier and Democrat Kay Rollison. Gabrielle Ledoux was invited, but she couldn't be with us. We'll go to opening statements. Ms. Bachmeier, 1 minute.
I'm running for State House from District 13 as a write-in candidate. The write-in campaign is the result of my Republican opponent wrongly questioning my residency and the Division of Elections making a favorable ruling for her without considering my evidence. But now let's get to a little bit of introduction about me. I'm a retired Army officer with proven leadership skills. I've managed one of the Army's largest intelligence budgets, and I've been singled out for my research work in data collection, analysis, written reporting, and oral presentations. I'd like to use my military skills and common sense to further Alaska's prosperity. I'm running as an independent voice for District 13 and Alaska. I have no allegiances to any individual, business entity, or corporation. My allegiances are to the people who live in Muldoon and at Elmendorf Air Force Base and across Alaska. I'd appreciate your write-in vote on or before November 6th. When you go to your polling place, please fill in the oval and write in Barbara Bachmeyer. Thank you.
Kay Rollison, 1 minute, please.
Hi, I'm Kay Rollison, and I'm honored to be running for State House in the new Muldoon-Elmendorf District. I work hard, I play hard, and I'm passionate about what I believe in. I've lived and worked in my district for almost 10 years, and I'm proud to call Muldoon my home. I moved to Fairbanks, Alaska in 1975 and worked on the pipeline, and ever since, I've been working for responsible development, good jobs, good training for Alaskans in Alaska's construction industry. Like many of my neighbors, I work two jobs to make ends meet, so I understand how important the permanent fund dividend is. I realize that being able to hunt and fish and keep meat in the freezer is a way of life for a lot of us, so I'll fight to protect those rights. I'm a straight shooter, and you'll always understand where I'm coming from. My neighbors and I strongly believe that Alaska's resources must be used for the maximum benefit of all Alaskans. We're adamantly opposed to the Pebble Mine, and we believe that any new oil tax breaks must be tied to new oil in the pipeline. As my neighbors, you can count on me to fight for these issues and your best interest in Juneau to the best of my ability. Thank you, and I'd appreciate your vote.
Thank you. Now we'll go to reporters' questions. The recipient of the question will have 45 seconds to respond,
okay,
and the opponent then will have 30 seconds to comment on what you've heard in the response. Stacey Eaton, your first question.
This is for Ms. Bachmeyer. You're a veteran. What should the state be doing to help returning veterans with issues such as suicide, PTSD, and disability, and the array of other issues they face when they return home?
Thank you for that question. I am a veteran, and I myself do have a disability rating that's service-connected. And one of the problems I experienced coming to Alaska, back to Alaska, and hoping to get proper VA care was a 7-year delay. That's unconscionable. And I'll fight for veterans who do need to have VA care and who are, for whatever reason, denied it initially, or let's say the process is like stringing along when people need help. That's unconscionable, as I said. And having experienced all of that firsthand, I feel now I know the people at the Anchorage VA clinic and up the chain of command so that I can address some of these concerns quickly and in the best interest of the returning veteran.
Thank you, Ms. Rollison. 30 seconds.
In our kind of bedroom community of Elmendorf, we have services available that I actually, on my website, there are a lot of links to them. I know that a lot of the newer folks that come in are not paid enough initially to have the kind of insurance and or pay for the services that the private sector provides. So there are a lot of issues that we can do as a community to help, and the bedroom community of Muldoon has those.
Thank you. Grace Jang, your question.
Ms. Rollison, you touched on this in your opening statement, but if you were in legislature during the last session,
yes,
how would you have voted on the governor's proposal to give up to $2 billion on in taxes, tax breaks to oil companies?
Well, yeah, I said in my opening statement that no new oil tax breaks should happen unless there's a guarantee of new oil that goes along with it into the pipeline. So I don't believe that Parnell's proposal was a good one, and I support the current ACE structure. You can always do better as far as new development, but I think the bipartisan coalition is doing a fine job holding the line and preventing that giveaway.
Barbara Bachmeyer, 30 seconds.
I agree with Kay. I think that House Bill 110, as marketed by the governor, is totally inappropriate. I would never be in favor of returning $2 billion each year to the oil companies. It has to be There has to be a form of tax incentive for maybe the heavy oil extraction, which is admittedly very difficult, and new drilling. I'm also in favor of the in-state large diameter natural gas pipeline to Tidewater.
Okay, let's go to Daisha Eaton for another question.
And that is actually the next question is about a possible gas line. What do you know about that? Is that really in our future, or is this just a pipe dream?
Well, I know that we recently got the price estimate from the big oil companies, and I just think that was way too high. I think we should take control of that, and we should, as a state, construct the large diameter pipeline from the North Slope to Tidewater for use in the Fairbanks area. Those people are really hurting as far as monthly electric bills. And then going to Tidewater, we can export, when possible, to Japan or Korea. In the Army, I spent 5.5 years in a row living in Japan and Korea, and I know the culture, I know the business decision-making processes, and I'm competent in the language, so I can be a part of making that happen.
Kay Rollison.
That was well said. I, too, and the people that I've talked to in my district, just in the last month since I started late, given this job late, I think it's about timing. We've been trying to get a gas pipeline since the 70s, same time the oil line came online. Mm-hmm. And whether it's large or whether it's small, I think it has a lot to do with timing. And while we can put a large amount of gas, and the LNG plant, you know, at Tidewater is something we strongly support. I'm very much in favor of Alaska Backbone.
We'll have to leave it there, and you can get into more of that. Grace Jang, your next question.
Ms. Bachmeyer, this question is for you. Alaska is home to the highest number of sex offenders per capita, especially child molesters, in the country. What would you do if you were elected to the legislature to protect the community, especially our kids?
Well, I am so in favor of having the statewide registry, so people who have been convicted of these kinds of offenses, which are extremely hideous, are registered, their addresses are known, and they are excluded from living in certain neighborhoods, let's say, for example, near a school or a place where children would frequently be. Maybe the monitoring system would be helpful for those sex offenders who have not proven themselves to be responsible after their conviction and after their period of incarceration, just so that we can know where they are and keep better tabs on them. But I'm so in favor of letting all the neighbors know and protecting children. That's the most important thing with sex offenders, that kids have to be protected.
Kay Rollison, 30 seconds.
30 seconds. This is going to, sounds like it's probably going to get happen a lot, but I agree with what she says. If I were a Republican, I'd be voting for her.
But you're not.
But I'm not, and I won't. But, the sex offender issue, I mean, that is what it's about. It's about protecting children, so.
Let's go back to Daisha Eaton once more.
So this is for Ms. Rollison. You alluded to this before, but okay. you did not run in the primary, and you replaced Hal Gazaway, who dropped out. Can you explain what happened and why you're running?
Okay, when I first was asked and agreed to do this, I was running because I was convinced from what I was being told that if I did not, that this seat would just be handed to Gabrielle Ledoux. I had not voted for her when she ran against Pete Peterson, and I hadn't planned on voting for her when she was running against Hal Gazaway, and I didn't really know that much about you, but I was convinced that if I wanted to have a choice and I wanted my neighbors to have a choice, I had to step up because there was no one else to do it. Now, since I've been running, it's different. I now know that the people in my district trust me more than they do Gabrielle to represent their interest.
Okay, Barbara Bachmeyer, 30 seconds.
I so agree with you. Gabrielle Ledoux is the least qualified person to represent District 13. She has previously voted in the legislature to change significantly, I guess I would say, the PFD. I just find that a lot of her decisions have been totally inappropriate for our district, which is comprised of blue-collar, hard-working people, a lot of different ethnic minorities, and military personnel. So I guess we're united on that.
Okay, let's go back to Grace Jang for her next question.
Okay, let's try to see if we can find something where you disagree.
Right, I mean, this is good in a way, though.
Right. Bipartisanship right here. What do you think are the biggest issues facing your district? You mentioned there's the military community, there's the working class families, there's the ethnic minorities, but if it could be boiled down to one essential need, what do you think it would be?
Jobs, jobs, jobs. We need to bring in family wage jobs for the people of Alaska and certainly for District 13. And yesterday on the ADN, there was an article about how cheap natural gas could motivate companies to move here to either expand their business or start businesses afresh. Companies need a stable and abundant natural gas supply, and we've got it here. And in the area of chemical engineering, in the area of iron ore reduction, these would be excellent jobs available with our steady, stable natural gas supply and renewable energy sources that could go along with it.
30 seconds, Kate Rollison.
Well, statewide I agree, but hey, there's a difference. At the local level in Muldoon, Elmendorf, the people there are pretty happy, luckily, I think, and that their issues, their biggest concerns are the local issues. School, potholes, removing the snow, you know, things that are local issues. But big picture, no on Pebble Mine, no on oil tax breaks without more, without more oil in the pipeline, and the pipeline, the gas line, and the LNG plant, renewable resources, local, true local jobs, local construction, local pride and community.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Now we go to our candidate questions. Each of the candidates will have an opportunity to question one another. The question should be 15 seconds long, and the answer should be 45 seconds. And then a 15-second comment by the asker of the question on the answer you received. So let's go first to Barbara Bachmeyer with your first question.
Thank you very much. I have just met Kay Rollison today, and I like her very, very much. I wanted to ask why there was a delay in getting into the race, but I guess we have an answer to that. So I'd like to ask you, what is your academic preparation or work experience that you can bring to the legislature?
Well, thank you. I have a B.A. cum laude from the University of Alaska here in Anchorage. Scott Goldsmith, P.J. Hill, Brad Tuck, those guys all trained me in economics, and, you know, I think they did a good job. My work history has been, I started working on the pipeline. I ended up running a labor union, was in U.S. District Court in front of Judge Von der Heidt under every title of Landrum Griffin Act, So anyway, and then I moved into management. I've worked for ARCO, I've worked for Alyeska as a consultant, I've worked for the Native Corporations, I was on the Red Dog Port Project. I've done all kinds of work in construction that was to help the contractors, Native Corps, agencies, the community, and, you know, the employers themselves and Alaskans to work together on construction projects.
Barbara Bachmeyer, 15 seconds.
Well, very impressive.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to know you a little bit better. And it sounds like you do have some very good qualifications that would serve our district, District 13, very well in the legislature.
Kay Rollison, your question.
I love you. Thank you.
I believe that is a first on this show.
Well, what can I say? I mean, if you like somebody, you like somebody. Okay, I'll ask you one. What you're trying to do, Lisa Murkowski did it, and it was really, really hard for her to do, and she did it successfully. Why are you going through this effort to do this? I mean, it's a big task to ask
the
anybody.
Write-in is what you're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, sir, the write-in.
And you're exactly right. And I think you alluded to the answer that I'm going to give a few minutes ago.
Oh, I know what it is then.
I just couldn't allow Gabriella Du to pick up this seat. And so I felt that after I was wrongly disqualified from the ballot, that this was the best that I could do. Mead Treadwell did offer me the option of going to court, which would have cost $50,000, and I don't have it. So this was the alternative that I picked up as the best one. So just like Lisa Murkowski, I do have these little armbands that are filling in the oval and writing my name, and I'm hoping that it will work. As I go door to door, I'm hoping it will work.
Kay Rollison, 15 seconds. Comment on what you just heard.
I wish you the best of luck.
Okay. It's your opportunity, Kay Rollison.
Not to beat me, but to beat Gabrielle, for sure.
Love only goes so far.
Yep, yeah. What can I tell you?
Kay Rollison, your second question for Ms. Bachmeyer.
Okay, well, since we were going to have three people and we only have two, you know, it's like, okay, so, Barbara, what would you like your constituents to know? Okay. Go for it.
Well, I've done a lot of research, and I feel like I have a good handle as to what we need in our district and throughout our state. One thing that's important to me is developing our natural resources appropriately and responsibly. What I envision and would hope to see and would hope to be a part of funding is the railroad extension from Fairbanks over to the Ambler Mining District. There are great resources there, and this would provide wonderful jobs for a lot of the people who live in that area. And I think that the revenue that we would generate, the taxes that we would collect, would be very, very good in sustaining the prosperity of Alaska into the future. I'm also interested in a couple of infrastructure situations around our district. I don't know how many people have told me that they'd like to see a pedestrian pass on the Muldoon Bridge going from Muldoon over to Tekapo.
We'll have to leave it right there. And Kay Rollison, 15 seconds to comment on what you just heard.
And they definitely would like the overpass pedestrian walkway across the bridge at the Muldoon, you know, going across towards Tekapo Commons. It's a busy place. They need to be protected.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Barbara Bachmeyer, it's your opportunity to ask a second question.
Well, I'm interested in responsibly collecting our natural resources, extracting them, and getting them to market. So why don't you talk a little bit about the Pebble Mine?
I'm happy to be able to say that the residents, my neighbors in Muldoon, and the ones I've been able to speak to on Elmendorf do not support the Pebble Mine. It's not about the economics, it's about trust. All the reports, all the research, more analysis is not going to change the fact that we cannot trust that foreign investments and the best intentions of government oversight are going to be able to protect that Bristol Bay fishery from devastation. Okay. And ruining the beauty of Southwest Alaska.
Okay, let's go to Barbara Bachmeyer, 15 seconds.
And I agree. One of the things that I've been troubled about has to do with the research. And people who have conducted empirical research will know that validating research is very important. Research design has to be given, and somebody needs to replicate the studies that the Pebble Mine is advancing. And that replication is not possible because a lot of the information that's required is not available to us. So I'm agreeing with you.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go back to the reporter questions.
Oh, do I get to say something about that?
Go ahead.
I just wanted to add that, you know, supposedly, you know, the Northern Dynasty and Anglo-American, you know, they've got $1.5 billion already invested. And some of my neighbors are concerned that with that much money, they're not going to drop this. And so they'll research us to death. They'll economics us to death. And so common sense would say that most Alaskans already know what's at risk. And so a lot of people are going to make a lot of money off the research, but I don't think it's going to change
the answer. Okay, let's go back to our reporters, and we'll start with Daisha Eaton this time around.
Let's talk about education. We haven't touched on that quite yet. This is for Ms. Rollison. Article 7, Section 1 of our state constitution says that schools and institutions so established shall be free from sectarian control. No money shall be paid from public funds for the direct benefit of any religious or other private educational institution. And as you know, vouchers there's been a lot of talk mm-hmm. about them, and a lot of people want to be using them. Should public funds be used to pay for private, charter, and parochial schools in Alaska?
No, ma'am. I think you just read it out of the Constitution. That's not the purpose of those funds. You know, we have a lot of money that is spent because we're required to provide, you know, fair and equal education even in rural Alaska, and that is costing a lot of money, but that's the law. So, you know, we should make our schools better for everyone, period.
Barbara Bachmeyer, 30 seconds.
Well, I agree. unfortunately, the record that the Anchorage School District in particular has right now is nothing to write home about. It's not anything to be excited about. We need to enhance the availability of charter schools, figure out how we can fund fewer students in classrooms with teachers. I would like to take a look, maybe do an audit of the administration building. I think there may be way too many employees working there, and the money should not go there. Rather, it should go to the classrooms.
So just a quick follow-up. Do you believe that public money should go to charter schools?
I think it's impossible because of our Constitution, and I wouldn't want to behave unconstitutionally.
Okay, let's go to Grace Jang.
Affordable housing. Let's direct this question first to Ms. Bachmeyer. Does your region have enough affordable housing? And if so, what can be done on a state level to ensure that working class families have an affordable roof over their heads?
Right. That's very, very important. And I would say there are insufficient opportunities in our district, in our city, for affordable housing. It's just very expensive to live here. We know that. I, as a legislator, would love to be a part of funding AHFC to a greater extent. I think that the nonprofits are doing a fabulous job, and I'd also like to encourage that kind of assistance. It's a big problem.
Kay Rollison, 30 seconds.
I own a triplex in Muldoon. I think I've raised my rent one time in the last 10 years. We're a bedroom community to Muldoon. There's not enough housing just in general. There are a lot of people on base that would like to live off base for education purposes. They do think that the schools outside the base are better than the ones on the base. But they have to violate a year commitment for housing on the base. So that's very, very expensive if they want their kids to move off base to have better educational opportunities. So yes, we need to do whatever we can to provide those opportunities.
Okay, let's go to Daisha Eaton for her second question.
This is for Ms. Bachmeier. Nearly half the state's population lives in Anchorage, and more growth is expected. What can legislators do at the state level to prepare to meet the needs of our growing and increasingly diverse population here?
Well, with regard to the diverse population, this gets back to what I was thinking with regard to the educational problem that we see in Anchorage. I don't know how many different foreign languages other than English, are spoken in the Anchorage School District, but it's a huge number.
I
think it's 90-something, too. Yeah. And so in order to make education work, to serve the best interests of these diverse language backgrounds, we need to have special classrooms, let's say, for all of the Spanish language students so that they can initially understand what's going on in English so that they can make the best of what's going on in the classroom. Sending a student who does not speak English to a classroom and expecting education to happen is impossible. It's irresponsible.
Kay Rollison, 30 seconds.
Well, I have to admit, on this one, we might differ a little too in that I think the community can do a lot more immersion type get-togethers, meet and greets, kind of like what we do during politics, so that kids, just like we do, in a cultural immersion when you go somewhere else to learn a foreign language, that if we had more community type get-togethers, volunteer, let's do it just for this very reason, if we would be helping community-wise as well as educational-wise make that difference.
Okay, thank you. Let's go back to Grace Jang.
Public safety. So the city's facing a budget crunch, and fire stations and police officers' jobs are on the chopping block, potentially. It's not done. But does a state have a responsibility? Is there a state-level action that can be taken to ensure public safety?
What I would say about that is that it's absolutely a fact that we had during the last legislative session an approved budget that was bloated, that had way too much money in it, and I would recommend that we not fund things like the Great Alaska Shootout, or I'm not in favor of the film tax subsidy either, but at any rate save money in the Department of Corrections, places like that, so that we would have more money for public safety. Public safety is essential. We need firemen and police officers. To get rid of these essential services, I think, is not the proper decision to make with regard to funding problems.
Kay Rollison.
Well, the issue that the mayor has brought out, I think a lot of that was scare tactics, but I think that's how he operates. And then, but there were some grants that were given, like for the new, we just read about it this morning, the new station out on the south end of town. Well, why are we giving a grant for a new station at the same time we're getting ready to close other ones? So that doesn't make much sense. So somebody's not long-term planning at the state level. I do believe that Health and Social Services has a lot of things going on that could be better administered, better coordination, and save us a lot of money there.
Okay, now we'll have a last round of questions in which the reporters will ask each of the candidates the same question. We'll start with Daisha Eaton, and her question will start with Barbara Bachmeier.
Ms. Bachmeier, is there hope for more renewable energy projects?
And this should be 30 seconds.
Absolutely. I think that it's wonderful that we have abundant natural gas. We have declining fossil fuel energy sources, but I think there are great possibilities for geothermal, hydroelectric, and as an example of that, Lake Chacachamna would be, I think, an ideal place to pursue hydroelectric, and it's right near Mount Spur, which is an ideal place to pursue geothermal. So I don't know why we're not getting with the program,
okay, we'll
because we really
it,
should.
We'll have to leave it there and go to Kay Rollison.
Most definitely. Alternative resources at the local level, I think, is long-term where we should be going. We have to be able to feed ourselves, and we have to be able to keep ourselves warm in the winter. And the last two storms we had showed us all that we're not capable of doing that on our own.
Okay, Grace Jang, starting with Barbara Bachmeyer, before we go to closing statements.
Okay, Ms. Bachmeyer, this is something both you and Ms. Rollison are passionate about, the Pebble Mine, but why is this a local issue? Why is the Pebble Mine an issue that affects Muldoon and Jaybear?
Well, I think that part of the Pebble Mine project would generate significant revenue. I think that's what's planned. And that would benefit Muldoon if we have more money to spend on various aspects of spending priorities that might be assigned there. Rather than go to the Pebble Mine, however, I'm in favor of going to the Ambler Mining District. I think that there are proven resources there, and that would be my best alternative. Then it would not impact any fisheries
whatsoever. Let's go to Kay Rollison, 30 seconds.
Well, the people in my district definitely support mining. They just don't support Pebble Mine mining. The mess that they've left in Africa on some of their other developments, you know, if all they have to do is declare bankruptcy and leave, who's going to clean up that mess? And are we even able to clean it up? So even though, yes, there'd be more revenues going into our, you know, general fund, our permanent fund, you've got too much at risk. You've just got too much at risk.
Okay, let's go to our closing statement, starting with Barbara Bachmeyer. 1 minute, and then we'll hear from Kay Rollison.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Michael, and Public Broadcasting for putting on this running program. I've enjoyed our time and the ability to speak directly to District 13 voters who are watching at home. As I said earlier, my name is Barbara Bachmeyer. I'm running as a write-in candidate for the State House from District 13. The district reminds me about my personal history. I was raised in a community of hardworking, blue-collar families, also from diverse linguistic backgrounds, much like I see in Muldoon. After college, I was commissioned into the Army and served at various military installations throughout the world. I can clearly understand the needs and concerns of potential constituents. Now I'm asking for Muldoon and Elmendorf to cast their write-in votes for me on November 6th. In order to do so, you just have to fill in the oval and write in my name. This House race should not be about how much money someone has in their campaign bank account or division of elections decisions. It should be about who's best able to represent Muldoon and Elmendorf. I'd like your vote, and I thank you in advance.
Kay Rollison.
I too would like to thank the studio for doing this. It's the only opportunity that she and I have had to be able to talk to the constituents on TV. It was a surprise that Gabrielle did not show up. I really think that one of the key issues in our race in Muldoon is that the people needed to see their choice. They wanted to hear from their choice. She's a choice, I'm a choice, and Gabrielle Ledoux would have been a choice, but she chose not to be here. I don't think that that's responsible. I don't think that's a good way to come out of the gate saying you're going to represent the people in your district. I don't trust her. I don't think my neighbors trust her. And I'm sorry, but I just believe that there are issues there. If she'd have been here to speak for herself, we would be able to, you know, everybody would be able to hear this. So hopefully Barbara and I have done a good enough job that you'll be able to vote for one of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bachmeyer. Thank you, Ms. Rollison. Next, we will hear from the candidates from House District 14. Stay with us.
Election day is November 6th. From the presidential race to Alaska's at-large House seat to ballot measures, every vote matters. Every issue matters. Hi, I'm Peter Granitz, APRN's Washington, D.C. correspondent. I'll be at the Dena'ina Center election night, recapping the national races and what it means for our state. What happens if the Senate changes hands? Will Congress remain divided? Can an election remedy some of the brinksmanship? And how can Alaska regain some clout at the Capitol? Tune in to KSKA Anchorage on Tuesday night, November 6th, for APRN's special election night coverage.
Join KSKA on election night. Tuesday, November 6th, NPR coverage continues at 7 p.m., and statewide coverage from the Alaska Public Radio Network begins at 9 p.m. You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage. Now here's Annie Feit to tell you about the ballot propositions.
I'm Annie Feit in the APRN newsroom. There are two propositions on this year's election ballot. One asks voters whether the state should hold a convention to revise or amend the state constitution. It's required to be on the ballot every 10 years. The other is a bond proposition that would allow the state to borrow nearly $500 million for transportation-related projects around the state. The bond package was originally proposed by Governor Sean Parnell's administration, but the legislature ultimately crafted the package of 36 projects. Representative Bill Stoltz, a Republican from the Mat-Su Valley, did much of the work as co-chair of the House Finance Committee. He says bond propositions are a Democratic way to get infrastructure projects built.
Each time it's a different set of arguments to the electorate, and that's the beauty of the process. The voters have to embrace that is a good public policy idea. They have to embrace it as an appropriate expenditure and coming from the appropriate funding source, in this case, bond and indebtedness.
The bond proposition would fund port and harbor projects in Bristol Bay, Emonic, Haines, and other communities. Road construction projects would go forward in several places, including Anchorage, the Mat-Su Valley, and Sitka. Two of the most expensive items on the list are also the most controversial. $50 million would go to the Port of Anchorage expansion and $30 million to the Port McKenzie rail extension. Bob Shavelson is with the advocacy group Cook Inlet Keeper. He says the ongoing Port of Anchorage project has been fraught with problems from the beginning and calls the rail extension a boondoggle.
Really, the bond measure is a poison pill, and it's forcing Alaskans to swallow spending tens of millions of dollars on these dubious projects, all in the interest of getting some more worthy work done around the state.
The state points out that it's a good time to borrow money for big projects. Alaska's debt manager guesses the state can borrow the money at an interest rate of less than 3%. The total amount of the bond package is about $453 million. Historically, voters in the state have usually approved transportation bond packages. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. You can find Monday through Friday night's schedule for Running on KSKA and Alaska Public Television at alaskapublic.org.
Now let's meet the House candidates in District 14. They are Democrat Max Grunberg and Republican Don Hadley. Mr. Hadley, your opening statement of 1 minute, sir.
I'm Don Hadley. I'm running for the State House, District 14. I came to Alaska 45 years ago in the United States Air Force. When my active duty tour was up, I had a teaching job offered to me on Elmendorf Air Force Base. I taught sixth grade there for 10 years before I went out to Diamond Mears and taught seventh grade to begin with, and then moved into high school, taught high school social studies, U.S. history, economics, international relations, and other and various other subjects in social studies department. During that 27 years of teaching, I served in the Alaska Air National Guard for 22 years. During that period of time, I served as a social actions officer. My principal duty was to do drug and alcohol prevention training, and the last couple of years in the Air Guard, I was the flight services commander.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Max Grunberg, 1 minute opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Carey. Hello, I'm Max Grunberg. I'm pleased to be running again, hoping to serve the residents of House District 14, which is both sides of Boniface and Russian Jack and Turpin. I'm 69 years of age. I've lived in Alaska for 42 years. I'm a retired family lawyer. I practiced divorce law, child custody and support for many years. I have been in the legislature a number of years. I have the most seniority of anybody in the state house. And I've been proud to help get things like Fire Station 6, Clark Middle School, a number of projects for the district, and I hope that I'll be able to continue to serve you and provide jobs now for people in the district.
Now we'll turn to candidates' questions from the journalists. Candidate questions will be given to you. You'll have 45 seconds to the person who receives the question and 15 seconds to comment, or 30 seconds to comment. So let's go ahead and get started here with Daisha Eden.
This is a question for Mr. Hadley. Why did you decide to run, and what's your roadmap to victory?
My roadmap to victory is getting the most votes. I've spent a lot of time going door to door, meeting people, talking to people, listening to people's concerns. Why I decided to run was because I've lived in this city for 45 years. I've been a very close observer of political activity. I've been active in various areas of politics, making several trips to Juneau during the years, and I thought this was a great time for me to be able to serve in my community.
Mr. Grunberg, 30 seconds on what you've heard.
I'm running again because I think there's a lot of work to be done, both at the state level. We have to determine what our revenue raising is going to be in the next few years, whether we're going to have some changes in the oil taxing policy. Also, there's a lot that needs to be done right in our district. We have two intersections that have caused many accidents and that we're in the middle of trying to deal with. I want to see if we can get those accomplished.
Okay, thank you. Grace Jang.
Mr. Grunberg, this question is for you. The city, the municipality, is facing a budget crisis, and fire stations could be closed, police officer jobs are on the line. Is it the state's responsibility to ensure public safety? Should those things actually be cut out from the city budget?
That's kind of a two-part question. No, they should not be cut out from the budget. It's like taking the most outrageous thing, public safety, letting people die because they can't get an emergency technician, EMT, out there, or that they couldn't stop crime because the police are cut. The state government has responsibility, I think, to help fund that sort of thing through revenue sharing. And about 8 or 9 years ago, under the former governor, Governor Murkowski, revenue sharing was basically eliminated. I think we need to help at the state level because we have the funds to do so.
Mr. Hadley, 30 seconds.
Fire and police protection are the last things that I would be in favor of cutting. I grew up in a family. My stepfather was a policeman in Indianapolis, and I very, very well know the dangers of being a policeman and public service in that capacity. So I wouldn't cut fire and police protection.
Okay. Deja, in your second question.
This is for Mr. Grunberg. As you've said, you've been in office for a long time, I believe since the 80s, and there are still many things you'd like to accomplish. What are the most important things?
Well, the most important things from the state's point of view is providing a long-term fiscal plan that will provide stable revenues for the state. From a short-term point of view, the state has got to keep the economy going and provide jobs now, not just in the future, but provide good education now, good jobs now. From the local point of view, we have a number of public works projects that have to be done. We need to help get the economy going so people can put bread on their table today.
Mr. Hadley, 30 seconds.
Revenue income to the state is the most important thing. People I've talked to in the oil industry say that they can't plan on long-term development because they don't know what the tax situation is going to be. We need to resolve that problem now.
Grace Jang, your second question.
Mr. Hadley, the governor's proposal to extend tax breaks to the oil companies by up to $2 billion failed during the last legislative session. How would you have voted on that?
I would vote no, because I really don't support Governor Parnell's tax plan. I think he got started, but it's incomplete.
Mr. Grunberg, 30
seconds.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I voted no for much the same reason Mr. Hadley stated. it basically was a giveaway. And if you give $2 billion away every year, that could be, if you gave it to the people, $4,000 for each Alaskan. I wouldn't advocate that. The interest alone would be $400 for every man, woman, and child. It was a giveaway without any return guaranteed. We can't sustain that.
Desh Eaton, your final question in this round.
A question for Mr. Grunberg. There's been a lot of talk lately about a gas line and the alignment happening that's necessary to make that a reality. Is that really in our future, or is that just a dream?
I hope it's both. I hope that it is a dream that will become a reality. I think we need to look to the west, to the Pacific Rim, for our customers. And we should develop a natural, liquefied natural gas plant. If we do that, we'll construct it now. It'll provide jobs now. It'll provide revenue to the producers, the shippers, and the state now. I support the concept. Now, the devil is in the details. Let's see how they work it out.
Mr. Hadley, 30-second comment.
Well, I support the gas pipeline as well. I don't think that we can wait to have this done. The way things go in the oil and gas business and other areas too, is there's so much interference by people and groups that don't want those things accomplished. That's the biggest obstacle to getting it done. We have a lot of natural gas. We can't use it all here. We have to ship it out.
Grace Jang, your final question in this segment.
This question is for Mr. Hadley. What does quality education in the 21st century look like in your district or in Alaska?
Quality education has to be education for the 21st century. We keep, as a retired teacher, I spent 27 years in the classroom teaching students. The things that we were teaching need to be taught, but they need to be taught in a way that helps people, helps students develop the skills that they need to have for this coming century.
Max Grunberg, 30 seconds.
Several things to answer your question. First, there needs to be stability in the education community, just like we've been talking about in the oil industry. We can't have teachers getting pink slips. We should be funding education, forward funding education, which we've started to do on a biannual basis. We've created in the legislature an education fund, but it's been used as a slush fund. It hasn't been kept for its primary purpose, which is education. We've got to be sure that kids get good lunches and breakfast. We have to help get well-rounded children and better educational materials, more books for the library, that sort of thing.
Okay. Now we'll go to the candidates' opportunity to question one another. The format is essentially you'll have 15 seconds for a question, a brief question. Your opponent will have 45 seconds to respond, and then you, the asker of the question, will have 15 seconds to comment, gentlemen. So we'll start with Mr. Hadley, your first question for Mr. Grunberg.
If President Obama is reelected, what impact would that have on the resource development in the state of Alaska?
Well, I'm not in the Oval Office, and I'm not necessarily qualified to know what goes on in his mind. I would hope that with our delegation, we could press the case, and through our association with other state legislatures as well, for development up here. I happen to be on a committee for the Council of State Governments called the SSL Committee. It's a committee on suggested state legislation, and it has the leaders from legislatures around the country on it. And what we need to do is better networking and have our people going back into the Energy Council and things like that that they're doing. There's no magic bullet. It takes a lot of work to get the attention and from the people in Washington,
D.C. Mr. Hadley, 15 seconds.
Well, I was talking to a man from Shell yesterday, and he's telling me about the Shell drilling in the Beaufort and the Chukchi Sea. And then he said, even after the wells are completed, it will take 14 years to get that oil and gas in the pipeline and to market. Why is that?
Well, we'll have to leave that here. Now it's Mr. Grunberg's opportunity to question Mr. Hadley. First question.
Thank you. In order to get things done in the legislature, it's necessary to work with people from both parties. What is your feeling about being in a bipartisan group, a coalition of some type, and working with one if there's one in the other body?
Well, I've had no problem working with other people. As I said, I spent 27 years in the Air National Guard in various capacities, and there I had an opportunity every day that I was on duty to work with other people, both from an enlisted perspective and also as an officer. So I have no qualms at all about being able to work with other people.
Mr. Grunberg, 15 seconds on what you heard.
Thank you. What I was specifically referring to was bipartisanship. In other legislatures, particularly in Congress, the lack of bipartisanship has virtually stalled any progress on even non-controversial agriculture kinds of bills. It is essential, I think, that both parties
thank
work
you,
together.
Thank you, Mr. Grunberg. You get a chance to ask a second question, so we'll give you the floor back.
Okay. How important, Mr. Hadley, do you believe it is to work with the community councils in our district? What do you think their role should be in helping to plan what you're going to do?
Well, as has been said, all politics is local. So that's really the grassroots of politics. I mean, I'm elected representative, or will be, hopefully, of the people in my area. And their concerns are my concerns.
Mr. Grunberg, 15 seconds.
I think that it's very important that the community councils be heard, because they set the agenda for the capital improvement projects, and they set the tones, and we need to listen to them. And that's why, even during the session, we have a telephone drop line and we participate telephonically. I try not to miss a single community council meeting. Not always successful, but that's
okay,
my
Okay, Mr. Hadley, your second question.
With regard to education, how would you propose to fund education given the budget, given the budget problem in Alaska today?
Well, the legislature's tried various things. On at least one occasion, we had a separate appropriation bill and passed it early in the session. So that was taken off the table and went through more quickly than anything else. I think if we have forward funding and a bipartisanship, that's another thing. I think using the education fund, it's a non-dedicated fund, but using it for its intended purpose is something else. And I introduced legislation to increase the endowment for higher education. I strongly support anything we can do to help, and I know you do too.
Mr. Hadley, 15 seconds.
Well, as Mr. Grunberg said, yes, education is a high priority of mine. Having spent most of my adult career in education, I can fully support what Mr. Grunberg has said about education.
Okay, Mr. Grunberg, your third question for Mr. Hadley.
What do you believe, Mr. Hadley, what would be your first piece of legislation or appropriation that you would introduce or attempt to get through if you were elected?
The very first thing we need to resolve is the oil tax problem. We cannot survive in this state unless we have oil flowing through the pipeline. Whatever else needs to be done, that needs to be worked out first. I would propose what we can do to get more oil into the pipeline, even if it means some long-term tax situation consideration.
Mr. Grunberg, 15 seconds.
What I had in mind was what your first introduction would be as far as legislation. I'm personally concerned about two different areas. The first is public safety. A number of pieces of public
safety. We're going to have to come back to that because this is a very short answer opportunity.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Let's go to Mr. Hadley for his final question for Mr. Grunberg.
Why would you choose to support President Obama for re-election?
Well, I did a vote for President Obama, and I plan to again. That's not the issue in this campaign, of course. This is a local campaign. But he's done some things that I think we can all be proud of. For example, the elimination of Osama bin Laden. And he's trying to turn the economy around. It's a tough job, but you got to give him credit for trying. He's made some mistakes, but you don't get anything done unless you're willing to take some risks and try to do something. You can't sit back and fiddle while Rome burns. And I think that goes at all levels of government. And you know, we've got to concentrate on what we can do here in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Grunberg. Mr. Hadley, 15 seconds.
Well, what President Obama has done in at the national level has definitely affected Alaska on a very negative, impacting the citizens of Alaska, paying the taxes, federal taxes they do, and seeing everything go for us to go further and further in debt that we'll never be able to pay.
Okay. Let's go back to our reporter question. Sorry about that, but we need to move on. Daisha Eaton, you have the first question here for Max Grunberg in this round.
We've talked a bit about education already, but I wanted to get to the idea of using public funds for private and charter schools as well as parochial schools. Is that something that you would support or not?
Is this to me?
No, this is for Mr. Grunberg.
Oh, I'm sorry. To you.
Okay. That would require a constitutional amendment. I would not support that constitutional amendment. I think that is part of the separation between public education and private education. I do support ways of getting money to private education. One of the bills, the important bills that I introduced when I served in the 1980s and was majority leader, was the first bill to encourage tax credits for contributions to private colleges and universities and public colleges and universities in Alaska. It has become the initial bill that has since been expanded and provides major endowments for higher education across the state. Two departments recommended it be vetoed. Governor Cooper, on our recommendation, signed it into law. Governor Sheffield, when he was president of APU Board of Trustees, expanded it. It's a good piece of legislation, good way to finance.
Mr. Hadley, 30 seconds on what you've heard.
Well, it is the people's constitution. If the people decide that they would like to have a referendum on changing the constitution to pay for school choices, I'm all for that. I don't own the constitution. It belongs to the people. People have every right to change it if they choose to.
Katie Grace Jang from Mr. Hadley.
Thank you. Mr. Hadley, you propose to reduce government regulations. Can you name a few that you would limit immediately?
No.
Would you like to elaborate?
Well, not having had the opportunity of sitting in the legislature and tracking everything that goes on a year-by-year basis, I don't have any background to be able to say this and this and this would be things that I do away with.
Thank you. Mr. Grunberg, 30 seconds.
As long as I've been in, it's difficult for me to give a better answer than Don has. There's a special committee we have, the Administrative Regulation Review Committee. I've never sat on that. Occasionally, they come up with legislation or ideas that are problems in the regulatory field. And once in a while, we come across a regulation that's so bad that we have to change it. In one case this last year, I drafted legislation to cure a problem from the Public Offices Commission.
We'll have to leave it there, Mr. Grunberg. Daisha Eaton for Mr. Hadley.
Reduce federal spending. We're looking at that. How should the legislature respond?
How should the state legislature respond
to reduced federal
spending?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure just how the state legislature can reduce federal spending. I think the that question probably should be better asked to our U.S. Senators and U.S. Representative.
Well, I guess what I'm actually asking is, if there's reduced federal spending, much of that money trickles down here to our state. What can the legislature do if we're not getting that money?
A short answer.
That's a good question. I don't have an answer.
So we'll take that. Well, that'll be for the future then, I guess. Mr. Grunberg.
Part of the problem is that the federal government has legislation, a number of pieces of legislation, that are what are called federal mandates. And they either don't fund them at all, or they fund them for a very short period of time and then they drop off. It's a terrible situation, and this piece of legislation requires that Congress track these things. It is not being followed, and the Congress is not doing what it needs to do. Also, they need to have more revenue sharing with the state.
Okay, we better stop right there and go back to Grace Jang for Mr. Grunberg.
Mr. Grunberg, from a state legislative perspective, what are your district's unmet needs? You touched on this, but if you could expound, please.
Okay, I'm going to give you very specific. First are traffic intersections. The intersection at McCary and Mountain View Drive, that is right by a big playground, and kids cross there all the time, and there's no safety there. At Caribou and Boniface, we've had fatalities. That is the most dangerous intersection in Northwest Anchorage. We're putting in playgrounds and things like that in Russian Jack Park. We have to actually get a new fire station built. We provided the money, and the fire station is on Airport Heights now, and they're going to locate it at Pacific Northern Academy at 4th and Burgaw. Also, we're going to be opening the new fire station on Diamond right by Bagich Middle School. We've got to be sure they don't close Fire Station 14.
Okay, Mr. Hadley, 30 seconds, please.
By Bagich Middle School at Diamond and the most pressing issues probably in my district would be traffic. I see the intersections Mayor Bagich tried to resolve the problem at Tudor and Lake Otis. I can't see that's a big improvement. The intersection at Northern Lights and Burgaw certainly is a problem.
Okay. Now the reporters will ask you a couple of the same questions, and you'll both get a chance to answer them in 30 seconds. So let's go first to Daisha Eaton for her first question.
What can state government do, if anything, to bring down the cost of health care in Alaska?
We'll go to you, Mr. Hadley, first.
Cost of health care in Alaska. Well, being on Medicare and running into this problem that it is, regardless of what has been said about you'll be able to keep your doctor, that's just not true. When I turned 65, my doctor retired. I was turned loose on the public system to go find somebody. There isn't anybody. I mean, you can't walk in. Sure, you can go to a clinic, but that's not like having your own personal doctor. That definitely is a problem and needs to be addressed.
Let's go to Max Grunberg for 30 seconds.
One of the real problems I faced representing Mountain View was when Anchorage Neighborhood Health Services closed their office at the corner of Commercial Drive and Mountain View Drive. Fortunately, a dentist went in there, but they're still searching for somebody there. Neighborhood Health Services then moved from Fairview to the south part of town, and I took the position at that point that I would fund transportation to take our people to them, because they had moved themselves from us.
Okay, we'll go to our final question before closing statements from Grace Jang.
Mr. Grunberg, this question is for you. You've touched on public safety. Now, federal authorities and Anchorage Police, local police, are struggling to corral the growing issue of gang activities. Can that issue be addressed with legislation? It's another two-part question. So the second part would be, what can be done on the state level?
This last year, I introduced legislation through the committee that extended a provision of law that was about to expire that allowed a judge, as part of sentencing, could require a gang member to wear an ankle bracelet for continuous monitoring to be sure they don't associate with other gang members. Another piece of legislation I introduced that passed allows a judge in sentencing a violent offender to look at their history of animal abuse, because animal abuse is often a precursor to physical abuse.
Okay, Mr. Hadley, 30 seconds, then closing statements.
With the issue of gangs, and I think that's an education situation. That needs to be addressed on a local level in schools. It is a cultural issue as well, which demands really close attention at the lowest level of the community.
Okay, we're going to go to our closing statements. Mr. Hadley, you have the first opportunity. 1 minute, sir.
Well, I'm Don Hadley. I'm running for District 14. And I have lived in this community for, as I said, for a number of years, 45 years to be exact, and I would very much appreciate having your vote on November the 6th, and thank you very much for the opportunity of being here today.
Max Grunberg, 1 minute.
Thank you very much. First of all, thank the panelists for taking their time to do this, and the moderator and the whole crew here at the station, and for you folks for watching. Because an informed electorate is the kind of electorate that we need to make certain that we have the public servants who will do the job for you. There are lots of problems facing the state. I'm on the transportation committee that we haven't talked about that looks at problems like the railroads, the airports, roads, that sort of thing. Judiciary, the criminal laws, and looks at legal issues. And state affairs, it looks like things like election laws. I'd like to see us bring back the open primary. I know many of you will remember that, when you could vote for anybody you wanted in a primary. I'd like to see us have more information in our election pamphlets so you know in the primary who you're going to be voting for. And I'd like to make it easier to vote by mail. Those are some of the things I'm looking at, and I'd appreciate your support. I'm Max Grunberg. Thanks for watching.
Thank you, Mr. Grunberg and Mr. Hadley. This concludes this evening's running programs. Join us tomorrow night starting at 7. We will hear from the candidates for Senate District H and I and House Districts 15, 16, 17, and 18. We hope you will be with us. Good evening.
Running is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated. Audio will be posted on our website at alaskapublic.org. John LaFournaise is the director, Pat Yak, producer, Josh Edge, associate producer, Scott Bruno, audio engineer. Running is hosted by Michael Carey. Panelists include Daisha Eaton of KSKA Anchorage, Kyle Hopkins of the Anchorage Daily News, and Grace Jang of KTVA. Camera operators are Philip Ginther, Candace Ferguson, Joe Jackson, Eric Judson, and Josh Edge. Lighting design by John LaFournaise and Scott Bruno. Production assistance provided by the League of Women Voters, Pat Redmond, Carol Dickison, Kay Ladimpera, and Barbara Norrell. Engineering, Larry Anderson. Traffic coordinator, Kristen Dugan. In master control, Sean Fletcher. Set design and construction provided by KPB Architects and Neeser Construction. This is KSKA Anchorage FM 91.1.